The Around the NFL podcast is now available on video.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I'm joined by a room filled with heroes. Well, some heroes, Chris Wessling and Greg Rosenthal. What up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Sessler Ferris Bueller'd out of this one.
Oh, don't.
He's on a float somewhere downtown singing the Beatles.
I don't think that was the Beatles, was it?
Don't make references that our young listenership doesn't understand.
Yeah.
It's before their time. That's why
what the hell's going on out here?
Ferris Bueller's Day Off? Come on.
So I guess we shouldn't talk about the greatest editor of the 20th century dying yesterday either.
Ben Bradley.
Yeah.
No. That's why we're so popular with advertisers and within the building, is that we are really nailing that 12 to 18 demographic. The kiddies love us. Go buy some candy.
They have no idea what we're talking about.
These kids today. I'll tell you what. We have a great show. This is our Wednesday show, back for another week of preview, this time previewing week 8. And we got a lot to get to today. We're going to hit the Thursday night preview, which is probably the best Thursday night game of the year. The Chargers heading up to Mile High to face the Broncos in an AFC West showdown. So we'll get into that game, give it some love. We are going to go over Chris Wessling's latest top 10 list. This time it is top 10 deserving Pro Bowl players, or deserving players that deserve to go to the Pro Bowl. And then we will play a little game, kind of a new game, based on a post we have up on the Around the NFL site, which you can access at nfl.com/AroundTheNFL. It is the trades that we'd like to see ahead of Thursday's trade deadline.
The pause before the slash keeps getting longer and longer. It's kind of like your edition of the old Pat Summerall thing, you know, that he would say at the end of every game. You know that one by heart.
Murder, she wrote.
There we go.
Were you aware
Wes
of that,
is
Wes?
Always talking about that.
I am.
He loves Summerall.
I do love Summerall. I don't remember him saying, stay tuned for Murder, She Wrote.
That was his famous thing. He would do the promo. This is more stuff that our 12 to 18 demographic won't get.
What the hell's going on out here?
You know, shut up, Lombardi, and listen up. No, he would do this. He would do the promo for Murder, She Wrote, before, which came on after 60 Minutes every Sunday night. And he started to have fun with it, where he would, like, take a long pause after Murder. So he'd be like, Murder, She Wrote. And he would change the inflection.
Well, that's because there's the ellipsis
in
the actual title
of
the show.
After the fact.
Ooh,
save this.
Work for TD. I like that.
No idea what you guys are talking about.
Really?
So we're going to get to all that. Big show. Before we do anything, though, we're going to check in formally with TD. TD, I want to issue an apology. It seemed like I maybe rode you hard a little bit on Sunday. Seemed to be some hurt feelings. We demand greatness, and it's at certain points of the podcast, I didn't think you delivered it. But on balance, you're an excellent producer, so I want to apologize, kind of.
Guys, it's fine. You know, you expect greatness from the show. I expect greatness from the show as well. So every now and then we slip up, but we're here to get the show back on the road.
All right, that's
wow.
Great.
Yeah.
I
so
feel like
earnest.
We're in a good place now. That was very earnest, surprisingly earnest. Let's do some news.
Yes, we can.
And I screwed up right there and then already. I don't know, guys. All right, let's do that again. Doing it live. Right. Let's do it again.
Do it live.
It happened in London.
In London?
All right, let's play the game. What is that from? Because I'm stumped.
I have no idea.
I don't know either.
Greg, you don't know? Dan, you don't know? Wow, I'm surprised.
It happened
Dan.
In London?
It happened in London. And you don't remember that.
Mm-mm.
Joey Tribbiani. When he first finds out, this is Friends, for those who don't know, first finds out about Monica and
what
Chandler's.
What are you doing watching Friends,
oh, yeah,
TV?
Yeah, okay.
And
Friends
know about me,
was
Chris
a
Wesley.
Great show in its day.
I'm not a big
fan. That was one of the worst shows of all time.
Oh, goodness, stop it.
Stop it.
I'm sorry it's not MASH, Wes.
The first season or two were all right, but then every episode of Friends got to be the formulaic Mad Libs. Here's where Joey would do something goofy. Here's where Ross would be an idiot.
That's TV.
No, it's not. Like, that's bad TV. The good TV is when the writers actually write. Bad TV is when the characters dictate what would happen in the show.
A lot of bad TV out there.
Friends was a very qualified. That was among the worst shows ever put together. The last few years it was on.
Just stop it.
It needed to be put out of its misery. It was just
awful. All shows that stay on the air too long eventually.
When the primary reason to do something is money, it's not going to be good.
Why do you think we're here? For the cheddar.
That's not why we're here.
Well, speak for yourself. Friends is a very good show. All right.
Awful.
By the way, TD.
Hideous.
I know exactly what you're talking about now. But it wasn't like that was an iconic line from the show.
Oh, what? I think it was.
Well, what?
It was the first time anyone ever found out about the relationship.
What TD's really trying to get to is that this week.
I am embarrassed for our listeners.
Two teams in London with the big catchphrase, wake up for London or something like that. What is it?
Wake up at Wembley?
Wake up at Wembley.
Wake up at Wembley.
And TD, way down the line, we're talking months down the line, I want you to surprise me with the true iconic Friends line, he's her lobster. Drop me a he's her lobster way down the line.
Will do.
Are you going to get up at 6:30 a.m., TD, to watch Lions-Falcons?
Our listeners are better than this.
I wake up at 6:30 usually every weekend to watch a Manchester United game. But for the Lions, I don't know about that.
I'm going to get up. I'm challenging both of you guys to do the same just for the fun
I've
of it.
I've got big plans Saturday night.
When else was this going to happen?
Let's get to some news, gentlemen. Let's start with Percy Harvin. We haven't formally had a chance to really talk about Harvin, who was traded to the Jets, of course, on last Friday, for a conditional pick, a mid-round pick. It can move up to, I guess, a fourth at the highest, fourth to a sixth. So a lot of interesting news with Harvin right now. The latest, Rex Ryan on Wednesday said that Percy Harvin will have a minor role in the offense on Sunday. He will handle kickoff returns and maybe punt returns. Also, we learned that the Jets did not permit Percy Harvin to speak with the media on Wednesday. They're trying to control the message with him. I just want to throw it to you guys. I love the trade as a Jets fan. I think it's exactly kind of what they need. It's a roll-the-dice move on a lot of levels, but at the same time, for a team with a really boring offense, it adds an exciting dynamic, and their special teams needed a shot in the arm as well, and he is the best in the business returning kicks, in my opinion. Your thoughts?
This is really, over the last few days, left a bad taste in my mouth, the way the Seahawks handled it. You never heard anything bad about Harvin out of Seattle until they trade him, and they orchestrate this message to the media. They disseminate all the information to all the NFL insiders around the country, talking about the fights he caused, talking about asking out of games. It's just like a propaganda campaign, and teams always have to try this after they trade a player. Why don't you just trade a player and move on without the propaganda?
Well, people knew some of these stories.
I don't think they did.
Maybe not the fight during Super Bowl week that's been reported, but some of the other things going on behind the scenes, I think they do know. There's a lot that reporters know
I don't think they did in this case. I don't think they would have kept that.
I wouldn't.
I think
I don't really have a problem with it.
It makes sense, though, because the Seahawks knew they had to sell it to their fan base.
You don't have to.
Why they did it.
You're playing dirty. It's a dirty pool to do that.
But look, a guy, Michael Robinson, who works for us, who was there in the locker room, I mean, he was one of the people that came out and said it. Yeah, he's like, I broke up that fight. Reporters are going to report. They're going to find out things. It's not always necessarily from the team. It's from players.
When five or six different reporters hear within hours of the trade, that's coming from the team. That's being disseminated from the team.
All right, but let's talk about do you like the move for the Jets?
Sure, why not? I mean, do you give up a future special teamer for 10 games of a guy who, if everything's going swimmingly, can be one of the top 10 receivers in the NFL?
Greg?
Yeah, I agree. I don't think he can be a top 10 receiver at this point, because I don't think he's that guy that at this point you're just going to roll out there and he's going to be a normal outside receiver that plays every snap and does the entire route tree and is going to be a complete wide receiver. But he's such an X factor, and I think you're going to get a little bit of that Randy Moss in his first couple years in New England and Terrell Owens in his first couple years. Not that Harvin's I'm not saying he's been a problem or not. It sounds like he has been. But just that he knows to make his money next year and the year after that, he better be on his best behavior and try to show the Jets he's worth $11 million next year.
And if I'm the
Jets, anyone else, too.
If I'm the Jets, I don't even look at the tape of how the Seahawks try to deploy Harvin in the year and a half. I go back to the Vikings when they got that monster year out of him that led to him landing with the Seahawks and see how they used him and knew how to use him.
Well, they're going to take Brett Favre out of retirement?
That's the second part of my
point.
Have
Brett Favre run around? I think Percy Harvin does well in the same way that Randall Cobb sometimes does well in Green Bay. He's the guy that Rodgers looks to when the play breaks down.
Also,
but that's not what
the
Geno
same
Smith
way that
is.
Jeremy Curley does well, which is a little bit odd that they extended Curley within a few days of trading for Harvin since they both are best in the slot.
I also don't blame the Seahawks if all of this is true on Harvin at all for doing it. You got to do it. You got to do. I mean, if it's becoming a problem with your team, you make the trade. And that's why maybe it seems like dirty pool that it all comes out, but people are going to wonder if you didn't know, you might be killing them for this trade, not understanding it.
Moving forward, some Patriots news. We'll start with a trade they pulled off on Tuesday. They acquired Tennessee Titans linebacker Akeem Ayers for a seventh round pick.
They flipped picks.
Oh, excuse me, yes.
Sixth to the seventh round.
And Ayers is a former second round pick of the Titans who's been active in just two games this year. But, Greg, tell us what you think about this move and how he might have an impact in New England.
Well, to me, it's a guy that you hope can be a 30 snap a game guy. And, you know, part of the reason they made it, as I know you're going to bring up here, is that Chandler Jones is out. And that's the big news here, that they feel like they need to fill some snaps. And Ayers, who knows? I mean, Bill Belichick said he could help in pass defense. He's a guy that's barely played this year because he's coming off a serious injury, and he's never been that big a difference maker.
The Boston Globe reported on Tuesday that Chandler Jones, the defensive end, and their sack leader, will miss about a month with a hip injury. Jones played 84 of 87 snaps in their most recent game against the Jets, and the only issue that we thought he was dealing with was a shoulder issue, so this kind of came out of nowhere on Tuesday.
He's their best pass rusher. Ayers has been, I think he had the double knee surgery in the offseason. He was a decent enough pass rusher in Tennessee, but wasn't playing because he didn't fit Ray Horton's 3-4 defense. He has experience in the 4-3, and the Patriots kind of vacillate between the two. It's worth a shot for a swap of late-round draft picks.
Yeah, it's worth a shot, but Chandler Jones is the best pure pass rusher the Patriots have had since Bill Belichick's been there.
Who's getting
period.
To the quarterback without Chandler Jones there?
Ninkovich?
I mean, no one. It's not like they had a great pass rush as it was. They're not a team that schemes up a particularly good pass rush.
With sacks.
You know, it's a huge problem because Jones is not only wildly talented, but he's an iron man. There aren't many defensive ends that play over 90% of his team snaps. That's what Jones and Ninkovich both did last year. It's a big drop-off with him out of the lineup. And I mean, and now it's starting to add up. You know, you're missing Jerod Mayo. You're missing Chandler Jones. You have pretty lame defensive tackles. And the next month, after this game against Cutler, that's a decent passing offense, you have Manning, Rivers, Luck. Rodgers is in the mix there somewhere.
Ooh.
That's coming up for them.
Murderer's Row. Mm.
And finally, this is the Patriots nugget that I like a lot. Darrelle Revis was, as Kevin Patcher, our great Chicago correspondent, put it, reportedly sent back to his island on Tuesday. He came to the Patriots complex.
Nice job, Kevin.
Late. He showed up late on Tuesday for a 7:30 a.m. meeting. And what did Bill do? The old grumpy Gus sent him home. He said, "Go home to your island, Mr. Revis." I must add that I saw as we were right before we were beginning to spin here that Revis's business manager says this report is untrue.
Really? Yeah. Revis said it's between me and Belichick. Talk to him. So that was an odd answer if it wasn't true.
A source close to Revis told the Boston Globe the message was definitely sent. The rules apply to everybody.
Hmm. This kind of reminds me of a situation that happened in this studio on Sunday. In this example, Dan Hansis was Bill Belichick, and TD was Darrelle Revis. And Dan had to, you know,
I had to
discipline.
Everyone is the same here. We cannot play favorites in the podcast.
There's a certain level of expectations when you're a member of the Patriots, and I kind of consider this podcast the Patriots of the NFL Media News Group.
Well, I'm glad the TD handled it like Darrell Revis and not Adalius Thomas.
Oh, that's right. The Patriots did this 5 years ago when they sent Adalius Thomas and three others home when they were late during a snowstorm.
Adalius Thomas, didn't he say something like, what did you expect me to do, get a helicopter and come in?
Yeah. He actually said teleporter.
Teleporter, like,
unless
great.
Unless we forget poor Brandon
Spikes.
Poor Brandon Spikes even tweeted a photo of his car buried in snow in that hellacious New England winter. Belichick said, screw it, and just went way under the rule book and just threw him on IR. Don't show up late to the Patriots complex.
By the way, it's already getting cold in New England, and Dan and other clowns like him miss bad weather. Enjoy your 6 months of terrible weather.
It's not that I miss, quote, bad weather. As someone that hails from New York in the Northeast, I like seasons.
Yeah.
And there just aren't seasons. Look, not in his head. I love that.
I was asked how I'm enjoying October, and I didn't even realize it was October because it's 80 degrees every day here in L.A.
Come on, Southern California. Get a weather personality.
Seasons are overrated. All right. You know, give me – you're, like, complaining because you get great food every day. Oh, let's have some mediocre
From the guy who had bread for breakfast this morning, just plain wheat bread.
That was kind of a weird move, caused some controversy in the newsroom. Greg ate a plain piece of wheat bread.
It was like he was
not
coming
toast.
From prison.
Yeah, not a sandwich, not like a breakfast sandwich, just a piece of bread.
Bread's great. Bread is
TD,
where all food comes from.
Stupid. All right, moving on. Hey, Brett Favre, who gets asked about a lot of things, doesn't seem to care about any of the things he's asked about, but he did have something interesting to say about Austin Davis, the Rams quarterback. Here is the quote, not to sound off my rocker, but he, in my mind, can be the next Tom Brady or Kurt Warner, Favre told ESPN. Brian Hoyer as well. That buried the lead there. Austin, like those mentioned, just needed a legit opportunity.
Wait, were you using Brian Hoyer in the same sentence as Kurt Warner and Tom Brady?
Listen, that was the first time I've even seen this quote as I was reading it, and Brian Hoyer got thrown in the mix too as the next Kurt Warner? Come on.
Let's be honest here.
Be serious.
Austin Davis went on to break all of Favre's records at Southern Miss. Mm. There's a lot of this going on right here.
What, just helping out, you know, pumping up a little Southern Miss?
Well, yeah. Yeah, he's...
It's kind of like me and Tulane kicker Cairo Santos. Always rooting for him.
Yeah.
It's a lot like that. I watched the game closely on Sunday, the Rams. And Austin Davis seems like a pretty nice player. But let's be honest. I mean, he threw for 45 yards through 3.5 quarters last week. Had a nice drive that put them, gave them a chance to win at the end of the game. But Austin Davis is not the next Kurt Warner. Come on.
I think he's a lot closer to the Hoyer end of the spectrum here than the Warner Brady.
But according to Brett Favre, Hoyer is also the next Kurt Warner.
He's got
Hoyer's the next benched.
Woo!
Austin Davis has a chance.
Sessler bristles if he was listening.
I don't know what kind of career he's going to have, but for the first 6 starts of his career, he has a chance to be a long-time NFL
he's
starter. He
also has
which
a chance
a
to be Case Keenum'd.
I don't think that's going to happen. I do want to credit Dan for a pretty good Brett Favre.
I have an impromptu.
Thank you.
That's good.
Thank you.
I have an impromptu go get my lunch proposition for Greg.
Okay.
Austin Davis will not start the 2015 season as the Rams quarterback.
Well, I'm not taking that.
Oh, he just said he's going to be great.
I think he's got a chance, but they could, you know, who knows what the Rams are going to do. Not the best decision makers at quarterback.
Touché.
By the way, didn't you make something off of Case Keenum starting this year? Some sort of sandwich thing. Keenum versus Mallett, I believe.
That was me. I said who would start more games.
We're off the reservation.
Yeah. AJ Green was on NFL Network's NFL AM. That is one of Chris Wessling's favorite programs. He said that the Bengals, after, you know, they started 3-0, now they're 3-2-1, haven't won in almost a month, are, quote, like the scum of the crop right now. So let's start where we have to, and the only logical place to start. What does that mean? What is the scum of the crop?
Well, you think it doesn't make sense, right? Because crops don't have scum.
Mm-hmm.
Well, scum is a liquid product.
It's usually the cream of the crop.
Yeah, but there's no cream in crop either.
Or the runt of the litter, maybe he was thinking of.
Or the scum of the earth.
Up.
in AJ Green's defense, scum of the crop makes as much sense as cream of the crop. It comes from the French phrase creme de la creme.
Look at the mailman. Go, mailman.
Which is alliterative, and that's why it used to be pick of the crop, and then people started saying cream of the crop because of the creme de la creme phrase. So that's how it works.
Alliteration.
That is an outrageous amount of information on this topic, Gwen.
Also, to AJ Green's defense, that show tapes at like 5 in the morning. So nothing that's said on it can really be taken too seriously.
But you should watch it. It's on every morning at 6 a.m. Eastern, Greg.
And the replay on again at 7 gets there.
If you miss it or you want to watch it a second time, it's coming right back at you real fast. Finally.
The Bengals do stink. He's right, by the way.
Yeah, we'll get to that during the previews on Thursday show. Finally, Michael Sam, the first openly gay NFL player. He's going to have to get to the NFL first in terms of playing on a field in a game, and it's not looking good right now. He was waived by the Cowboys from their practice squad on Tuesday. A little quick refresher, because I know the story is something that you haven't heard much about. Michael Sam, 7th-round pick in May, cut by the Rams at the end of camp, picked up by the Cowboys, now dumped by the Cowboys. So we may have seen the last of Michael Sam. I don't know.
No way.
It's a good sign that we didn't hear a peep about him while the Cowboys were doing so well, that it didn't become – it wasn't an issue in Dallas ever. He just was like a regular practice squad guy.
Right. I can't believe they overcame such adversity of having, you know, the distraction of Michael Sam. I think he'll be back because he's been on a practice squad. He had some production in the preseason. I think this shines a light on what so many hundreds of guys go through that are trying to make the NFL every year, that bounce around, that get cut from practice squads. And those guys, kind of like Michael Sam, a 7th-round pick, they usually end up right back on a roster in January when rosters expand, and I have a feeling that's what will happen with Sam if he doesn't get a job in the next couple months.
Or he'll be in Canada playing football. And that's what's happening. All right. Now, gentlemen, let's get into what this might be it. This might be the best Thursday night football game of the season. The CBS folk, this was the one they circled, I would think, in terms of high-profile matchup of AFC contenders, I'd say. I don't know about media markets, but the San Diego Chargers heading to Denver to face the Broncos. The Broncos, who suddenly look like the Broncos of last year on offense, which is a terrifying thought. Peyton Manning had one of his best performances ever when he set the touchdown record on Sunday night. 4 days later, Phillip Rivers comes to town. Last time they played in primetime last year, big win for the Chargers. Will they be able to pull off the upset? This time around, Chris Wessling, I start with you.
Greg and I spent a portion of the morning discussing where Phillip Rivers and Peyton Manning belong in this top four. Clearly, it's Manning, Rodgers, Rivers, and Luck as the top four.
I think Luck is a solid four, by the way. Not quite with those three, but yes.
But I guess where I'm going with this is Peyton Manning has a lot easier matchup this week than Phillip Rivers does. Rivers is going against Ware and Von Miller, who are on pace to meet their 32-sack goal. The Broncos' secondary is playing really well. I think they're second in total defense. And Peyton Manning's going up against a secondary where Brandon Flowers has been one of the best cornerbacks in the league this year. Will not play because he's concussed. Jason Verrett.
Wait, who was it?
Brandon Flowers. I see where you're going with this. Yeah.
You want to make Flowers?
Ah, there we go.
There we go. All right, go ahead.
Jason Verrett in the Defensive Player of the Year conversation.
He's been incredible.
He's been great, questionable to play with a shoulder injury, and they're without a couple of pass rushers too. Peyton Manning's going to have an easy time of it.
They've also been without Dwight Freeney for a couple weeks. He started out the season so well, has totally vanished, and to flip it over to the Chargers side, I mean, Rivers, that offensive line is not playing well. The running game should be fine, but he's going up against what's now one of the best defenses in the league and has a cornerback trio that I think is the best cornerback trio in the league, because Chris Harris is playing incredible. Bradley Roby was a great pick by John Elway. It was kind of out of left field pick. He's playing terrific. And then Aqib Talib is doing his thing. It doesn't set up well for this Phillip Rivers MVP narrative that's been going on. It sets up like after this game, people are talking about, oh, I guess it's just Peyton and the Broncos year anyways.
Got it. Peyton Manning wins another MVP. That would be insane.
Well, there's other people in the mix, too, this year. DeMarco Murray, I mean, Roger, who knows?
Luck.
J.J. Watt. Throw Luck in there. I don't know.
So I think that I think we're all picking the Broncos here, but it wouldn't be insane if the Chargers. I mean, they're the team of ATL, the team of around the NFL. We love the Chargers this season. There's no reason to think they can't. What's so funny?
Our hearts aren't into it. We named the team of the ATL.
I'm into it.
We're already sneaking out the back door and going down the alley.
Give me a break. Who else gets away from pressure better than Phillip Rivers?
I don't know. Our hearts clearly aren't in this.
You love the little pocket rocket. Brandon Oliver. He's jumping around like Frank Gore. That's my comparison, Oliver.
He's basically played three games, and he leads all rookies in rushing yards.
Right. What do you think of this Frank Gore comparison?
I think he reminds me more of Maurice Jones-Drew.
10 pounds. Yeah, I can see that. 10 pounds lighter, but a lot of power and a lot of that hopping. He always finds the hole. He kind of waits, and somehow sees it. That's hard
to see.
It'll
be interesting to see what happens when Ryan Matthews comes back, what they'll be doing with that backfield, because obviously Oliver's proven himself. But we're not gonna pick him. We're not gonna pick the Chargers. Come on,
no,
one of us. Come on,
no
way. Let's do it.
But the Chargers
you
played
guys first.
The Broncos better last year than any team. All three games, they essentially controlled the pace of play. Even in the playoffs, you know, they did a good job playing keep away. And there are more weapons for Rivers to throw to this year. Eddie Royal's playing very well, kind of shockingly. Malcolm Floyd has been a big factor. Gates is playing better. They can maybe still do that keep-away strategy if they're good on third downs.
To your point, Peyton Manning's career passer rating, 14 points less against John Pagano defenses.
Yeah, since Pagano has gotten to San Diego, he is 6-6 against the Chargers, which is kind of shocking to me. That's a shocking stat.
Here's, to me, the key to the game, and we saw it on Sunday night against the Niners. When the Broncos jump on a team early and all of a sudden you look up after half a quarter and it's 21-3 or 14-0 or something like that, the Chargers are done. If they can keep this thing close through a half and they keep the ball, as we're saying, control the ball, they know how to win this game. They know how to beat this team. We need them not to get the doors blown off in the first quarter. Is it possible with Peyton Manning playing at this level?
Easier said than done. I just think the Broncos' defense is so much better this year, too.
All right, guys, here we go. So, Chris Wessling, man, you do such a great job with these lists. I'll tell you what. I just get to these are.
You have never read one of these lists, including this one.
That's what's called Dan buying time as he finds the right spot he wants to read off.
And I'll tell you what, position power rankings is what they're called. I don't know. It doesn't seem to be quite positional anymore, but I will tell you this. It is presented by Lenovo.
Sponsored.
The banner reads presented, Greg, so I had it right initially. Great brand, and we know that right off the top. And you're doing them proud because you're delivering great content. This week, it is 10 players that Chris Wessling believes deserves to go to the Pro Bowl.
Well, balloting started on Sunday, so it's timely.
Ooh, company man.
If you're filling out your ballot.
NFL.com.
To me, I enjoy doing this series, but for me it's never about the actual ranking, which maybe that makes me the worst person to do it. Fans like to talk about the numbers, where they're actually ranked. For me, it's always been about the analysis and shedding light on how certain players are playing. So this is a perfect opportunity for me to do that. 10 players who you should at least consider for the Pro Bowl, because these guys are more under the radar. They've never been to the Pro Bowl, or they're not like household names.
All right.
Well, except for, you know, Jason Pierre-Paul.
But he's coming
or
back
Jordy
from
Nelson.
Jason Pierre-Paul coming
Spoiler
back from
alert.
Two seasons where he was no good.
I didn't know this.
Greg
was
just
a...
so excited. You're like
you
someone
mean,
when they open
alert.
Up they open up a Lenovo product, they can't wait to get into it and use it. You can't wait to get into this list.
This isn't Breaking Bad or something. It's been on the site. Hundreds of thousands of fans of Chris Wessling have already read it anyway.
All right, so we'll start at number one because, yes, Jordy Nelson is your number one player who deserves a Pro Bowl nod. I'm pretty stunned that he has not been to the Pro Bowl yet.
It's wow. an out. It's
that's,
an outrage.
That's absurd.
That
it's
is
an
crazy.
Outrage.
Gotta go.
He's gotta go.
This is the year.
Where is he, by the way? Because the wide receiver rankings, if you're making – I know you did one earlier this year, Wes, ranking the wide receivers, correct?
The summertime. Greg and Mark shared one while I was out of town.
Okay, great. So anyway, we all thought Calvin Johnson was far and away – our producer, TD, said that Calvin Johnson was going to have 712 touchdowns this year. It's not working out.
He's 24, hurt. I believe. Was the
He's
number.
Hurt for the second straight year. So it kind of opens up the debate a little bit, who's the best wide receiver. And Jordy Nelson, you can make a case for Jordy Nelson, right?
This season.
Well, Calvin Johnson's the best receiver.
Right, but he's hurt.
But if you're talking about who's played the best this season, if you want to say Antonio Brown, that's fine. But I'm taking Jordy Nelson as the best receiver in the NFL through 7 weeks.
DeAndre Levy, the Detroit Lions linebacker, is number two. Why Levy was?
Well, he was robbed last year. He was up there with Thomas Davis and Levante David as the best linebacker in the NFL against the pass. And this year he's been awesome against the run. I think he and Sue are the two stars on the number one rated defense in the NFL.
Number three, Vontae Davis of the Colts, cornerback, famously a famous hard knock scene was where he got traded to the Colts by the Dolphins, and he interrupted Jeff Ireland to see if he'd call his mother or grandmother to talk to her. This man has grown up. He's a grown boy now, and he's making plays in the secondary.
I feel so far removed from the rest of American society because I was in the 9:30 meeting today, and that same exact story was brought up about his mother or grandmother or whatever, and I had no idea.
I like
what they
to
were
send you guys to the different meetings around the corporate like things around the NFL offices.
They're a lot of fun, I have to say.
Well, I think Vontae Davis, he's on here because the Colts are a surprisingly good defense. They've turned up some pressure, and they're getting off the field on third downs. They're not allowing third downs, and the reason why they've been able to send so much pressure is because Vontae Davis and Greg Tuller are very good press man corners. You allow them to take two guys away and send the rest at the quarterback.
Right, they're going to give up some passes, but you have to give Ryan Grigson a lot of credit now for that Vontae Davis trade. I think it's worked out. And for Toller, who is a free agent that no one thought was going to be that big of a deal from Arizona, and that those two guys are kind of the linchpins of their secondary.
And I will name off. Those are the top three on Wes's list. Here's 4 through 10, and we can just throw out any thoughts we want. Because that's what we do around here. Greg Olsen, Panthers tight end at 4. JPP of the Giants. Has he not been to a Pro Bowl? He's had to be.
He has, this is it's not just guys who haven't been to the Pro Bowl. He's coming back from 2 years where he stunk.
No one's really noticed how well he's been playing.
Golden Tate, Lions wide receiver, also known as one of Greg's and his stable of boys. Golden Tate's.
Wait, that's my boy.
I like
it.
I'll claim him now.
Boys.
We had a scientific debate on this podcast.
I admitted that.
I lose track of your boy stables.
that sounds wrong. Wesseline had a list
padlocked
of
boy stables.
Best free agent
no windows
bargains. We need to move on from this line of discussion right now. Best
Help
free agent
me.
Bargains list. Back in March, number one on the list, Golden Tate. I mean, he has made, I think, a bigger difference in terms of his team winning and losing games than maybe any receiver in the league. You can throw a couple drops in there, but no one's made more game-changing plays.
How about any free agent in the league?
Sure. He's been one of the best signings. Who knows? I mean,
you could say he should be higher on this list. Well, how great he's
been. I didn't want to play two receivers back-to-back.
Okay.
You got to get him. He is a Pro Bowl player right now. Kyle Williams, nice to see him there. Very nice
player. Number seven on
the list. Should represent that Buffalo Bills defensive
line. He's the best
line.
Williams on their defensive line.
He certainly gets paid less than the other one. But Mario Williams is a player too, but Kyle is just the guy that is the unsung hero of that line.
He's had the most dominant game by a defensive tackle I've seen all year against the Chargers. In the game, the Chargers won, but Williams just toyed with their interior linemen.
All right, 8, Harrison Smith of Minnesota. Rolando McClain, a comeback player of the year candidate. Cowboys linebacker at 9, and number 10, the charismatic punter for the Indianapolis Colts, the electric Pat McAfee.
I put him on there just for your sake.
Why? Guy's hilarious. And a great punter. You said the best, by the way, the best defensive line play you've seen. By far, and it's not even close, been watching football like 20 years or so now, the best onside kick in the history of onside kicks was the one he did on Thursday Night Football against the Texans. Mm-hmm. He had a kick at 10 yards. He kicked it 10 yards and 3 inches and then recovered his own kick. It was brilliant.
He has 3 onside kicks this year. I believe at one point he had the only 3 onside kicks in the NFL. And he's the only punter I've ever seen with a celebration every time he makes a good punt.
Now, I know you've heard my theory, Chris, on the beef between Hansis and Pat McAfee. Maybe I'll throw it by TD and see if he agrees with my theory. That Dan, Dan works here. Pat's on NFL AM quite a bit. And what Dan sees in Pat is a guy kind of encroaching on his funny man for the NFL media news group territory, and he doesn't like that.
Dan is from New York, and you know how they are. Very competitive gentlemen. So I think you're right. You're onto something there. Just gonna put it out there.
Because let's face it, McAfee's going to have a podcast someday here. TD will be producing it.
Probably.
He'll be ignoring our podcast for it.
Probably.
I think Pat McAfee is a great talent in this industry. Untaps. And when he's out of the game as a punter, I would welcome him to the NFL media umbrella.
For the record, I'm not buying that theory.
But thank you, Wes.
I think there's another reason.
What?
Oh, I'll tell you off the air.
By the way, I do have to have one problem with your list. Okay. Harrison Smith gives up too many plays. Whenever I watch the Vikings play, they're hitting a bomb and Harrison Smith's side of the field because he runs up, gives up too many plays.
I've seen that happen once.
I've seen it happen a few
times.
All
right, guys. That's enough.
Okay.
Let's wrap it up. Moving forward. We will close out today's show with really a conversation that started in written form. As I said, on our website, we did a post, trades we'd like to see. The trade deadline is on Thursday? Is that tomorrow?
It's on next Tuesday.
Cool. Good info by me. Next Tuesday, is October 28th, is the trade deadline. So we, each of us for Around the NFL, threw out a trade we'd like to see. Not necessarily, and I very rarely dip into the comments section to see what's going on over there because it's usually a human sewer scenario. But I will say this, that people were upset about some of these trades. Just really upset.
I haven't checked the comments, but then you didn't get it. You know, relax.
That's a thing. It's something, just stuff we'd like to see. Maybe not realistic, but fun stuff. So let's maybe play a new game.
Mm.
And I will give Chris Wessling props. We were brainstorming downstairs. Oh, it's a fun way to get into this game type thing. People like games. And Wes, you came up with what?
People like games.
Well, it's a trade scenario, so it's which team says no.
Who says no?
Who says no?
Wes, I was thinking if we can get TD. I was thinking if we can get some women singers. 1950s
like the
singers.
Chantels.
If we could actually get the Chantels, that'd be good if they're alive.
Third.
And we could go, who says no? Something like that.
No, I was thinking more, it was one of my news drops months ago, and it's from the Planet of the Apes movie. When Caesar first talks in the first movie,
where
he says no.
Freaking sci-fi.
It's pretty epic.
Cool. We
but
definitely
like
do
that one. Yeah. No. Yeah.
It would go, who says no?
Maybe. I like that.
Sorry it's not Caesar from the Planet of the Apes 6. Come on, dude. Planet of the Apes.
You're going to need a bigger planet.
All right, I'll start. So to make the who says no, it's not just throwing out a trade. An actual trade, the parameters of the trade have to be out there. So I will start with Johnny Manziel, Cleveland Browns quarterback. You know, we got an extension coming to Brian Hoyer potentially if he doesn't lose to the Raiders this week. And they're going to want to do that and make it nice and clean. They got to get rid of the first round pick now. The Browns, known to make decisions on a whim, they're going to offer, or the Jets call up the Browns and they say, "Ooh, we got Percy Harvin now. We're excited about it. We got Eric Decker. We got Chris Ivory in the backfield. We got some pieces now. Now we just need a quarterback to tie it all together. Geno Smith can be a backup. Let's try to get Johnny Manziel from the Browns. And we'll give the Cleveland Browns a number second round pick in the 2015 draft. And if that's not sweet enough, I'll throw it out. I'll say 2016 draft, a conditional second rounder that becomes a first rounder if Manziel plays 85% of the Jets snaps next season. Who says no?
Well, yeah, this conversation never happens. The Jets aren't giving up a second round pick for a guy who couldn't beat out Brian Hoyer in August.
Well, that's not exactly what the situation was, though.
It's exactly what the situation was.
It wasn't purely on play with that. It was always
it was
a situation where the Browns were trying to establish that they were in control of the situation.
No.
Oh, for sure.
Brian Hoyer left that door wide open, and they were waffling for a little while on who it was going to be. Manziel had a clear opportunity to take it, and Hoyer played terribly in August. He's played better during the season. But Manziel, I mean, it's easy to forget that in August, everybody was trashing how poorly he played.
But then you're essentially saying that Johnny Manziel is shot as a prospect in the NFL based on three
I'm
or
saying
four
his trade
games.
Value is shot until he shows something. Mm.
I think the Browns say no because this is a pick, I think, that probably came from on high in their organization, or at least it was an organizational pick. The city's excited about him. He's a first-round pick. No one thought he was going to be a Pro Bowler right out the gates, and I think they're far from wanting to give up. So even if John Idzik, you know, woke up out of his slumber and returned to call within a few days, I think they wouldn't want to. They wouldn't want to do that.
What makes us think that Manziel is going to have a better career than Geno Smith?
Well, it's a hunch.
You're asking us. I'm saying the Browns think that. I don't think they've given up on Johnny Manziel.
No, I'm just asking Dan.
Well, that's the thing. It would be a huge gamble by the Jets, and it would be potentially asking for outright disaster to bring Manziel to New York City or close to New York City, and that could blow up in their face. And as I fear with all Jets moves that they'll eventually go wrong, this would just be another in the long line. But it's just fun. And Jets need a quarterback, though. Do not get sucked into Geno Smith playing well in New England on Thursday. He's way too inconsistent. We've seen what we've seen. He's going to be good sometimes and awful sometimes. You got to find someone better and more consistent than Geno Smith.
And save your tweets. We don't really think Johnny Manziel could get to the Jets. I'm actually going to give Chris Wesseling the password to my Twitter account and the ATL just to block everyone that does
I'm
that.
Staying in on Friday and Saturday night because that's more fun than I could possibly have elsewhere.
All right. Who says no? Wes, you're up.
When we play this game, we have to remember that general managers value draft picks like Scrooge McDuck values his vault.
Mm.
So
Scrooge
right.
McDuck analogy.
In the offseason, they do. And then on like draft day, they'll just trade things around. They don't really care anymore. They're like, all right, here's 2/3 and a 1/4 for whoever.
Darren Sproles goes for a special teamer.
Right.
Yeah, it's crazy. All right, so Larry Fitzgerald has basically been banished from the Cardinals' offense. Bruce Arians hates him. Carson Palmer ignores him. He's the best receiver of his generation. It doesn't even matter.
Mm-hmm.
So since they have Michael Floyd, Andre Ellington, John Brown, and Fitzgerald's due $24 million salary cap number next offseason, Cardinals might be losing him anyway.
Mm.
He solves the Patriots' outside receiver problem, move him back to the X receiver, which he used to play in Arizona. They kind of moved him to
that
the slot.
Likes.
Patriots give up a 6th-round pick and a conditional 3rd-rounder that goes to a 2nd-rounder if the Patriots win the AFC East.
Wow.
Who says no?
I'd say the Cardinals say no. Just because they don't want to face the fallout. The Patriots, sign them up. Sounds great.
Wait,
2nd-round pick?
What did the Patriots have to take on?
Whatever.
That
they'll just take Rozai Dowling or something with that pick.
And that option next year?
No, they can just cut him.
Well, they. I don't think.
They'll just restructure.
Yeah, I don't think you do it for a rental. The Patriots have more room. They can be flexible, move some cap money around. I think if you do it, you do it with the idea that Fitzgerald's going to be there for 3 years.
Why don't they just wait out this season, the Patriots, wait till the Cardinals cut him and then just sign him?
How many
because
more?
Tom Brady's another year older, another year closer to
exactly.
the end. You got
to
value each season now.
But you're going to, if you trade for Fitzgerald, this is why I think the Patriots say no, they'd be giving up draft picks. And I think that trying to get him up to speed in the middle of the season, it might not be something where they could jive immediately. I'd rather just wait and get him and make one last push for both guys next year.
Well, you're not sure that the Cardinals are going to cut him. The Cardinals could restructure.
Seems like it's heading in that direction, though, doesn't it?
I don't know. They love him there.
I like this move. I like just sending more superstars, especially in offense, to the Patriots. And what are the Patriots going to do, you know, with their second-round picks anyways? Draft Aaron Dobson or Rozai Dowling or Bethel Johnson or something? Just go get a veteran.
Chad Jackson.
All right, your turn, Greg.
This is – the whole trade is laid out in our article. As you mentioned, 6 trades we'd love to see. I think it has a vanity URL. Did you mention that one?
No, I didn't. I did not edit it.
I wish I knew it off the top of my head. We'll get back to that.
Oh. That's a bad job. People don't even know what a vanity URL is. And then on top of it, you don't even know what it is. Come on, boss.
Jay Cutler coming off a disappointing performance. Chicago fans are annoyed. Mark Trestman – not feeling good about that contract that his front office gave Cutler in the offseason. They say, whoops, we're sorry. They send him to Tampa for Josh McCown, who's already done great in Mark Trestman's system, and they'll throw in Mike Glennon so that they can have a nice young arm to develop in Chicago. Chicago gets out of Jay Cutler's big contract. Tampa's got all sorts of cap room. Cutler would be the best quarterback they've had since maybe Doug Williams, even if he's only average. Who says no?
This is a people have accused you of being crazy for this. I think you might be a mastermind.
Yeah, I like
wow.
it.
I think Trestman, if I remember correctly, met with Mike Glennon before the draft 2 years ago.
Mm.
I think Kressman is a big Mike Glennon fan. We know he likes Josh McCown. He had him last year.
Josh McCown's numbers were better than Cutler last year.
Much better.
$17 million pretty much a year, guaranteed. So Tampa needs to spend that money somewhere. It's got all that cap room.
You know what this reminds me of? The old famous, and if you haven't seen it before, find it on YouTube, when the girl from Melrose Place was on Conan O'Brien, and Norm MacDonald was sitting there, and she was doing a Carrot Top movie, chairman of the board. And Norm kept on interrupting her while Conan was trying to be nice and was just embarrassing her about, you quit Melrose Place to do a movie with Carrot Top? And then at one point he steps in and interjects. He goes, you know what they should call the movie? Box Office Poison. And the girl, I wish I remember her name. She was just like mortified. Well, Jay Cutler is Lombardi Trophy Poison.
Wow.
Well, everybody knows by now. That everybody knows, the football world has to know. The Bears got sucked in. Why would the Bucks? It is a
box
great
office cup. Poison.
Why would the Bucks want to take on Jay Cutler and they become the team that has to deal with waiting forever for that promise to happen? It's just not going to happen.
I love this answer because 98% of the people who read this article probably thought the Bears would say no.
Right. Everyone said that this was crazy, that the Bears would never trade Cutler away. Here's why. Because I went back through the archives, looked for the leading passer of the Buccaneers franchise in their history each year. Who are the Buccaneers quarterbacks ever that have been better than Jay Cutler? Brad Johnson for a year? Josh Freeman, give me a break?
Mm. That's it. That's the list.
It's probably back to Doug Williams. He had a pretty good run in they weren't winning games, but he was playing well. He was okay.
The football world has to be catching up with what the fans have already had by now, though, that Cutler is not going to win you a Super Bowl.
He's not the guy. Deep to Vincent Jackson and Evans, and maybe it works.
Do you want to? You want me to let you inside the mind of a Bears fan?
Yeah.
So my buddy AJ lives on Tybee. If you go to Tybee, we have a lot of listeners have told me they've been to Huckapoo since we've talked about it. Go to Sunday Cafe for lunch. AJ is the owner and head chef. Huge Bears fan. Here's what he texted me this afternoon. Tressman is losing the locker room. Don't think he's an NFL head coach. I know it doesn't help that you have a QB, but he chose him. It's about to get ugly. We're through for 6 years.
That's similar to what Kevin Patra, Chicago correspondent, has said, that Cutler just really draws just the madness out of people. He's frustrated by them.
Have faith in Tressman.
By the way, Courtney Thorne Smith is the Melrose Place actress.
Oh, yeah.
That got normed on Conan O'Brien.
I liked her in Summer School.
Oh, yeah. Very underrated movie that no one's heard of that listens to the podcast, too. here's the vanity, the URL, NFL.com/dreamtradescenarios. Dial that one up.
Wow.
I didn't come up with that.
That is catchy. I'll tell you what.
it's going to be mentioned on NFL Total Access.
Oh,
Wednesday
good.
Night.
Fox, Internet ratings poison.
Will we be name dropped?
Well, they'll say around the league, around the NFL.
Because
hopefully.
One time a tweet that I had that got read aloud on the air was not used because they couldn't pronounce my last name. I've been working here almost 5 years.
Well, you got to step up your profile. Do better work.
Be like Vernon Davis and concentrate on your brand.
I know. Okay. All right. That's it for today's edition of the Around the NFL podcast. We will be back tomorrow night where we will recap the Thursday night football matchup we talked about, and then we will go into Sunday's games and preview every game on Sunday as we do every week. So get ready for that. Thanks for listening. This is Dan Hansa signing off for the mailman, the boss, and the great TD behind the glass. Until Thursday.